Cooney, reel 6.
But the ground was good at Bullecourt, wasn't it?
Well, it was dry, but it had been bombed, blown up a bit. A good deal.
I see.
And there was no surprise. That was the trouble.
Before we go back to UK after you were injured, is there anything at all about your work with tanks up to the summer of 1917 that we missed and you feel that it's important to include? Any particular incidents or any personalities that you remember?
I don't think so, no.
Sorry, can we just put it in context? Time is July 17. You've been posted at Bovington as a staff captain in tank
No, I wasn't posted. I was posted to the depot as a returned officer wounded, and I was pulled out of the depot by the staff captain to assist him on the staff.
What sort of work were you doing at the depot before you took up your staff post?
Well, I was doing nothing because we were... practically at once I was pulled out, put to the staff. Mm-hmm.
What do you remember of Bovington and the tank headquarters there when you went there? How big was the setup? How many machines?
Oh, it was 6 battalion lines which had been built for the Australians. And when they went away, the tank corps was moved down there from Thetford. And they occupied the whole camp. There were 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th, 16th battalions, all in training there. And
had the training developed in any way since you yourself trained in France?
Oh, I think it had, yes. It was all highly organised.
Tell me about it.
And very well. Well, I can't tell you a great deal about it because I wasn't doing it. You see, I was on paperwork in the office.
Now, while you were at Bovington, one of your tasks was associated with setting up a new gunnery school. Could you tell me how that happened? How did it come about?
I think really it came about because I was one of the early people returning from the battlefield and was deemed therefore to have some practical knowledge, which wasn't very great. And when they started the school, they thought I would be a good fellow to go and assist the commandant best I could, and he and I set up a man called Palmer. I've forgotten his initials. He had been in the tank corps at home ever since they started. I think he was up at Thetford, and he really devised the training programs and that thing for the actual weapons, and I merely supervised the instruction in the classes. And
had Lulworth already been chosen as the area when you became involved, or was part of your job to find a suitable area?
Oh, no, it had already been chosen quite arbitrarily, just like that.
Yes.
They said, there's a good hill to shoot into, let's try that. Mark it off as a danger area. And we had to mark it off, and the sea had to be a danger area. It had to be notified to the Royal Navy and the fishermen and all that sort of thing. And that's all we did. There were nothing ever went into the sea, as far as I know. Never heard of it. In those days, certainly.
And how did you go about organising the training of the first classes you got?
Well, it was just the training in the actual weapons. Detailed mechanical training, care and maintenance and all that sort of thing.
Well, this period at Bovington continued up until August 1918, when you returned to France with the 14th Battalion?
July, I think it was.
July or August?
June or July. The first battle was the 8th of August, and we'd been there some time then.
So you returned to France with 14th Battalion?
14th Battalion, yes.
And began preparing for your part in the final push?
Yes, we did the all. We just carried on training until we were warned that there was the future battle on.
How would you compare your work in this final period towards the autumn of 1918 with the tank program and operations you had been associated with in the earlier period? What had changed? Anything?
Oh, everything. The thing was totally different because we had then the experience of Combray. We knew that we were going to be employed that way and that we were going to do it properly. And that was all our training was.
Well, you said everything had changed, and you've now given yourself...
Well, everything's changed, you see.
You've now given yourself the problem of explaining to me what everything changing involved.
Well, we knew that next time we were going to be used, that we would be used as an attack of surprise without any artillery preparation, so that the going would be good and we could make lots of headway, and we weren't going to be fouled up with horrors like we were in the early days, and that we would also be supported by adequate forces of the other arms, and we were. And the thing was an immense success from the start.
Tell me about your part in this particular.
I was commanding a section of tanks, and I went over on the 8th of August in the initial attack. We reached our objectives. We saw such enemies as we found in the cornfields off, and the infantry were established. And in due course, the cavalry, two cavalry divisions went through. And as far as we were concerned, the day's battle was over. And we got a count a couple of cavalry horses and went off to see the fun. I don't really know what I can say. I can say that we went over at zero, and everything went according to plan. We had no troubles or difficulties, and we went to our objective, and we reached it, and we...
Without incident?
Oh, yeah, without any absurd incident. We were just motored straight through and attacked such enemy as we found and saw them off, and the infantry came along and in due course occupied the line. We got into the old Somme line, actually, that day. And then they tried to put the cavalry through, and that's where they got ran into trouble. Because the Germans had then got a counterattack going, and they attacked very strongly from the air. They attacked the cavalry division from the air. It was a shocking state of affairs. Mm.
You've said that everything had changed as far as our tank corps was concerned. Had anything changed in respect of the Germans' ability to counter the tanks?
None. They had produced a tank by then, but it was hopeless. Mm. We did run into one or two of them, but they never could put up any show. We'd see them off every time.
We've been talking for quite a while now about your work with tanks. I find I still don't have a very clear conception of a tank section commander's function.
Yes, I see what you mean. It's quite true. You see, I'm telling you about now, the 10th of August, was a purely impromptu show. It wasn't part of a big laid-on attack. It was the thing was fairly fluid, and I was sent up to help a certain unit to do it, which was in trouble, to see what we could do, and I had to work it all out with the commanding officer and send my tanks off one or two areas to try and deal with machine gun nests that were holding up people. And that they did at some loss. We lost them all, actually. A lot of the chaps got back. Some of them were killed. But it was a successful operation, although we lost heavily. Go on.
No, you finish what you were saying.
No, I think that's all. Then my job was to collect my soldiers and such tanks as we could get and get them back. And I spent a long time trying to do that, great difficulty, because most of them were behind the German lines. And I did collect some, eventually buried some on the site, and then we had awful trouble getting back, because the Boche had put in a counterattack, and we got mixed up with that.
I wonder if you could fill what I think to be the major omission from what we've been talking about. I should like to know, from this point of view of how people did their jobs, exactly what a tank section commander's job involved, what his section consisted of, how it was organised, how he dealt with it, what kind of problems were frequent, things like this. Can you talk to me about it as a sort of job, as a
Yes, I can't quite remember the organisation. I think we had four tanks. We varied between three and four. And I can't remember what we had in that particular battle, but I think we had four. And one's job, as I say, was to use those tanks against such areas of enemy resistance as were holding up the infantry, which they told us. And having done that quite successfully, we got the infantry on. To go round, my job then was to go round and find out who was casualties, who'd been killed, who'd been wounded, where they were, and how the tanks were, and whether we could bring them back, and they were still working. Generally to collect everybody and everything, you see.
What were the problems of command and control of your unit in an operation?
Well, it was entirely personal. I had no signals, and it was entirely a question of going one tank to the other, or having them close to you and telling them. It was entirely personal command, nothing else.
Did that involve, for example, during the course of an operation, having to get out of your command tank and rush over to...
Very much, yes. In fact, one spent most of one's time out on one's feet.
Mm. See, I hadn't realised that, which makes me feel that, you know, we haven't really done justice to the subject in some
ways. No, I think you're probably right. I quite agree with that. I think...
Well, you've got...
You spent a lot of time going from one tank to the next. You had no radio like we had in the Second War. You had no means of communication. And you had to do it all personally.
What about problems for you as a section commander in terms of retrieving tanks that had got bogged down and in terms of maintenance and things like
well,
that?
Well, all I had to do was to get such tanks as were mobile under their own power, collect them and take them back to headquarters, and to arrange for the evacuation of the crews of those that were immobile and their weapons, if possible, so much as we could take them out. And bury our own dead. That's all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that took a lot of doing at that time.
Were your casualties high?
Oh, pretty high, yes. I can't remember the exact numbers. They were pretty high.
Mm. What were they mainly caused by?
I think shelling mostly. The Boche used to shell the tank whenever he could, and the shell used to go through. And when a tank got into difficulty, it did sometimes, people were trying to get out and get caught machine gun fire.
Yes, yes. Did people who worked with tanks during this time develop a tank psychology? You know, once heard of the trench psychology, in the sense that after a good period in the trenches, you tend to felt naked unless you were in your trench. If you got outside, you felt kind of lost and everything was open and foreign and insecure. I wondered if there was any peculiar psychology, whether there was a peculiar tank psychology in that kind of way.
I think originally there was. I was conscious of it myself originally in 1917. But by the time 1918 had come, I think a lot of it had disappeared. You merely used the machine as a means of getting your weapons about the field and attacking the enemy that you could find. Mm. And if you had to get out of it to do anything, you got out of it and did something.
Mm. How did you find the infantry or other arms come to that matter that you had to work with, reacted to the tank?
Oh, well, they were most very pleased to tell you what to do, what they wanted done, and they all cooperated very well, and I hope we did with them.
One thing I discovered when I was interviewing people who were with the RFC during the First World War and also with the RNAS was that they complained that people who were using them very often had little conception of what the aircraft was capable of at that primitive stage in its development. I wonder if there were any comparable experiences you had with tanks, which was...
Well, of course, they were, and they were all resolved personally. This period I'm telling you about, August the 10th, the commanding officer of this unit, I've forgotten his name, he was a Frenchman, French-Canadian, he would tell, ask me, can you look there, people are holding, can you get somebody in there? And I would say, well, I think we probably can if we go around that way. Perhaps you want a bit of supporting fire, you can get the gunners to shell them a bit, and so on. It was all worked like that, personally.
Mm-hmm.
There were no elaborate plans made at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I think after the main attack had gone in and was successful, there were a lot of these little operations all over the place, that sort of operation.